You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome in to this Wednesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers all the time. Today is a big day. Today was supposed to be Domantas Sabonis Player Review Day. It's still going to be Domantas Sabonis Player Review Day. However, we must start this podcast off with rejoicement because the draft lottery was flawless for the Pacers. First of all, though, who am I? I am Tony East, the host of Locked On Pacers. I write about the Pacers for Forbes, and I do this podcast all the time with Adam Friedman. Unfortunately, Adam is not here today. He will be here on Friday to talk to you about Miles Turner and continuing on the player recaps. But let's celebrate because Zion Williamson is going to the Western Conference. The New Orleans Pelicans have won the first pick in the NBA draft lottery, and that means that Zion will not be playing the Pacers more than twice a season. Unless the Pacers and the Pelicans make the finals, which if Anthony Davis stays, isn't impossible. And the second pick in the draft went to the Grizzlies, which means Ja Morant's going to go west, or RJ Barrett, whoever. They'll probably pick Ja Morant, though, which is super cool for the Grizzlies. And then the third pick is the Knicks, and that's good for them. And that's not great for the Pacers, but it could have been way, way worse. They didn't get Zion. That's about as good as it could be. And then fourth is the Lakers. They're out west. It was a great night for the Pacers, the Cavs, who had the third best odds, I believe, and the Bulls, who were sitting at six, slid down. No, that might be wrong. The Cavs might have been at four. No, I don't remember. The Cavs were at two, and the Bulls were at four, and they both fell three slots. So the Cavs, the Pacers' divisional opponent they play four times a year, fell to five. The Bulls fell to seven. So the Pacers just got almost, I mean, if the Lakers had been three and then, like, the Suns had been four and the Knicks had been five instead of the Knicks being three and the Suns being five, that could have been literally the perfect lottery for the Pacers. But it was still very, very good because, I mean, number one, this is the big takeaway. Zion Williamson is not in the Pacers conference. They only play him twice a year. They don't have to play him in the playoffs. I mean, this, I'm stupid high on that dude's career. I think if you're not, you're dumb. I'm not even kidding. He's going to be awesome. And then the residual effect there, though, this is kind of a bummer, is Drew Holiday is less likely to be traded now because the Pelicans might actually be pretty good. And Drew Holiday might want to stay on a team where he can play with one of the talents of a generation. So I do think that hurts. For those of you that listen all the time, you know that me and Adam often feud about Drew Holiday's availability. Obviously, if he was available, I want the Pacers to pursue him, but I've never thought he was available. Now I really don't think he's available. I'm going to stomp that even farther. And Adam actually texted me, so I want you to hold him accountable when he lies to me on Wednesday. But Adam actually texted me and said, there goes every Drew trade. So he knows now that Drew is off the table. But the second pick going to Memphis is big because Ja Morant, another largely considered to be franchise caliber player by NBA teams. I don't know if he's franchise caliber, but he's still going to be very, very good. Going to the Grizz is a big one to me, too, because one, obviously he goes west, and two, they have Mike Conley, and they've kind of already wanted to trade Conley anyway, and now they'll have Morant and DeLon Wright, who are both 26 and younger, that they'll want to play in their point guard rotation, and they're going to want to go young and play all these guys with Jaren Jackson, so they really, I mean, maybe they want Conley for mentorship, but I think they would rather have assets. And, adding a stack, if they do pick Morant, they wouldn't want a point guard in return for Conley. So that means Holiday is less attractive to them, which isn't a good thing, but it also means he's more likely to be less of a sticking point in trade. So Conley becomes more available, and it's less likely that Holiday's in that trade. The guy we're talking about today, Sabonis, might be the guy if that ends up happening. But, anywho, Mike Conley more available, great for the Pacers. And again, the top two picks going west, three of the top four. I mean, that is as good as it gets. So that's why I was so psyched to do a lottery pod for this day. And now, I don't want to do a break. I want to jump right in. We're going to talk about Domantas Sabonis. And we usually do pros and then cons, but the con section is shorter and it'll fit in well seamlessly, with how I want to time this out segment-wise before ad reads and things like that. So we'll just jump into the cons instead. Sabonis has a glaring a glaring con to me, and it is what is holding him back from being a pretty good center to a really good center. And it's a big thing. His defensive positioning is not awesome. He's a super smart player, so I know he can figure it out, and I know he knows what I know that the tier system that's been described to me before with defensive skills is can't, won't, and doesn't know how. And Sabonis, a lot of the times, is just can't. He knows how, and he will. He's just a step slow. And I think can't is the best place to be because you know what to do, and you can do it. You just haven't quite put it all together yet. So for Sabonis in particular, what I'm talking about is defensive positioning and pattern recognition and rotations. I talked about this with TJ Leaf a lot. But what the problem is to me is he's just so ever so slightly out of position all the time, and then he's a step late to cut off a defender or cut off a drive, and compounded with his bad positioning, all of a sudden he has to foul. 239 fouls this season. That's 19 more than last year and only 28 more minutes of play. So that's a lot. 3.2 fouls per game is crazy. 4.7 per 36 minutes. I mean, if he was a starter, he'd be in foul trouble nearly every game because of this. It's easily his biggest flaw to me. And some of the gripe of him not playing all the time is fair and justified. I think he showed that he deserves more minutes. The team wants to get him more minutes. We learned in the postseason presser all that is rosy. However, it's hard when he himself is in foul trouble and limiting his own minutes. Now, that doesn't happen all the time. He only played 24 minutes a game because him and Turner were an awkward fit, which is another con that I'll get to in a second. But 25 minutes a game, excuse me. But that's his biggest one to me, and it just culminates in a lot of it adds in a lot of other problems for him. But like his offensive game is so refined, we'll talk about his pros in a minute, that it's hard for me to find outside of maybe speed an offensive weakness for him, besides that he can only use that left hand. Al Horford totally exposed that weakness by just sitting on his right shoulder and saying, turn that way and shoot, and he couldn't do anything. He had to be a passer, which in one of their best two games, I think it might have been their best game, game four, until the very end. Actually, game two is their best game, but in game four, he was at his best because he finally figured out how he can leverage his other moves and make passes instead of just being limited to left-handed layups that are going to be swatted by Horford. But either way, he's very one-dimensional in that way, and a team that only has 2 days to prepare for him in the regular season can't always remember he's a lefty or can't make a perfect game plan to slow him down, but a playoff team who has weeks of preparation between games, watches you over and over, can sit on that shoulder and expose that weakness, and we saw that in the playoffs. I do think he can correct that, but he has not yet. So we'll see what happens with that. I do think he'll grow that skill. He's very good. He showed that he can shoot even though he only shot when he was absolutely wide open this year. I wouldn't call him a shooter by any stretch, but he can make it, which is important. You can't just completely leave him all the time. It's not a con that he doesn't shoot. It's just he doesn't pop very often. I think that variation would mix up his game. But the other one I wanted to talk about, the Turner fit. They were a positive net rating, but they were not great together in the playoffs. In fact, they were mostly bad together in the playoffs, which is kind of what matters. And, it's awkward because one has to play one position on offense and an opposite position on defense, which is just awkward. It just is what it is. They're not a perfect fit right now, and I don't really know what it's going to take to make them a perfect fit. It's not on necessarily Sabonis or Turner. I mean, obviously it is because it's their skills, but like, it's the coaching staff's job to make them fit. This isn't a con of Sabonis' game. This is more of a con of him in the context of the Pacers, in that him and Turner did not end up finishing the season in the rosiest of lights. But his con list is short. His con list is very short. A lot of smart, scout-minded people I've talked to around the league are very, very high on Sabonis. A lot of other teams are pretty high on Sabonis. Should a trade be on the table? I don't know. Now that's what matters, right? Trade value is what other teams think of a guy, not what your team thinks of a guy. So I think I think if he does get traded, he has higher value than we think, but not such high value that he's worth like more than me and Adam talked about in that 8th to 14th pick range level of trade, should he be traded. But anyway, we'll talk about his future in the third segment here. Let's move on. Let's take a quick break and then talk about some of the pros of Domantas Sabonis, which there are many of. So, where do I even begin with this one? Sabonis can do pretty much anything that he needs to do on offense. He is possibly the best screener that the team has. I think Turner is a good one too. But it's not just the screen. I think both of them are pretty good at actual screens. What you do after the screen is very important. Turner is good at popping in one direction into space. Sabonis is good at knowing when to short roll, when to dive, when to physically roll and seal, when he himself needs to pop, which he doesn't. I don't think he does enough because he's such a good passer and dribbler. He can get away with it, but I think he can do that. And he's such a good hub for creation in that way. And it was such a boon for the second unit that he could, you know, okay, their set broke down because something went wrong, or they cut off the main action, or whatever happened. Okay, now you can throw the ball to Tyreek or Holiday or Kojo or whoever's in, run a pick and roll with Sabonis, and you're getting a good shot out of that set. That is such a boon. That's why the bench mostly to me was so good this year, because they had a fallback all the time. And I know that Nate loved Sabonis because of that, because if the offense does stagnate, you need to run some ancillary thing to end your possession. Victor Oladipo is the good ball handler. Sabonis is the good roll man. You know, they always had a guy who could bail them out when they were both healthy. Now, obviously, Sabonis or Vic didn't end that way, but that helped keep Nate's offense looking competent enough until he lost one of those guys. But that is Sabonis' biggest thing to me, is that he frees up other guys with those screens, he creates space for himself, and he always makes great reads out of them. This is like a low-level basketball skill, but it's one of the ones that, for some reason, sticks with me when talking about the NBA. It's like your AAU and your youth coaches, AAU up to a certain point until the dudes are just freak athletes, always tell you, catch it, and when you catch it, don't just stand there. Immediately dribble or shoot or pass. Do something. Get in triple threat and make a pass. Sabonis always catches and immediately does the next thing, and it keeps the defense moving. It keeps guys off balance. It keeps the offense flowing. He's just such a cerebral offensive player. It's such a good thing for the team. It's such a good thing for him. It makes him so valuable. It makes me enjoy watching him so much on that end of the floor. And it's huge for the team. So I already talked about the screening and the rolling. His post game is also terrific. You know, I don't know if we actually talked about this on the show. I wrote an article about it, though. He finished with the individual best field goal percentage in Pacers history this season, at a shade over 59% for a reason. One missed shot more puts him under Jan Mahinmi. So he had to make every single shot he made to get it. But most of that came from his shooting at the rim. I'm going to pause for a second and let you guess what you think he shot from 0 to 3 feet this year, because it's insane. Did you guess 74.1%? Because that is just stupid good. Like 30% better than Tyreek good. I mean, I know that's not the bar, obviously, but like a lot of good centers even don't get to that 74% mark. He was just insane around the basket. I think that Knicks game on Halloween, when he went, I think, 10 for 10 or 11 for 11, really cemented and showed that, you know, all that work he put in the offseason really paid off with him being such a good screen and roller finisher, all that. And it comes with... he has a lot of post moves. Some are more patient, some are quicker, some have a fake in them. They all end with a similar shot over his right shoulder, or kind of a duck in under, still going to that direction to get it up to his left hand. But they all work pretty well unless you have Al Horford on your team, which makes him a nice scorer in the post. Another thing that's so good about him in that post, though, is the passing. His assist percentage this year went up 6% to 18.2%. By the way, let's take a look at Sabonis' advanced stats for a second compared to last year. Free throw rate, up. Offensive rebound rate, up. Defensive rebound rate, up. Total rebound rate, up. Assist rate, up. Steal rate, up. Block rate, stayed the same. Usage rate, up. Everything, his usage went up and everything got better. That's insane. His usage went up and his true shooting went up, which is the rarest thing in basketball to happen. The only gripe you can have is his turnover rate going up, and it only went up a little bit. It went up less than a percentage. And I think I should have included turnovers in the cons. Pardon me for skimming over that. But, you know, he's so good on the boards. He's so good down low. He's such a good screen and roller. Like, I can't say enough nice things about his game. He's such a good player that is held back so much by his defensive positioning and being a little groundbound and slow on that end. Although that dunk over Embiid, you would never know he was groundbound. But he's just not all there on D, and that really hinders him. And the turnovers and fouls culminate to him, you know, having enough. Those are the biggest negative plays. The two biggest negative plays for a team are turnovers and fouls, that it limits his playing time. And he's got to clean those things up. But this is the positive section, and we know he did so many good things this year. There was a reason the bench was so good. He was so good. I think he led the team in BPM when the year was all said and over. All the advanced stats love him, and I love him. He was so good, and I think he's got a bright future if he keeps improving. Because remember, that was really his sophomore year as a center, because he spent his rookie year as a power forward in Oklahoma City. So let's take one more break and talk about Sabonis' bright future and if it will be in Indiana. It's the question to me of the, I mean, it has been for like a year and a half now, but you have Sabonis, you have Turner. There are these two guys who are both good and excel mightily at very different things. What does that mean for this team? Who's going to stay? Can they keep both? Can they work together? The playoffs lessened my belief that they can work together, though it didn't completely get rid of it. Ideally, you try it this year and see what happens while one of them's still cheap, but you know what? We'll see. But I think it's hard for me to have the rosiest outlook ever on either of them being on the team long term. I don't know what the team is thinking in terms of trades or anything like that. I know just from being around McMillan and the things he likes and the people I've talked to about McMillan. Now, this is not like people who work for the Pacers. This is just people who know the league very well. But they all acknowledge that Sabonis is a Nate guy. However, I think Turner showed his value in the playoffs, and the Pacers organization, including Nate, really likes him. You never know what the future of these guys. It's so fluid all the time in a situation like that, where a choice, quote-unquote, has to be made. But Sabonis, going into the last year of his rookie deal, has some pretty solid trade value on a cheap deal, team control, really good player. But at the same time, he has that value to the Pacers because he is a good young player who's cheap and on team control. And if they can make him work with their stud center that they already have, who can defend the paint at the highest level in the league, basically, then great. That's perfect. You keep that guy around and you have them rampage the league together. And if not, you have a tough decision to make. And I don't know if that means anything for Sabonis or not on the trade front, but we'll see. I think he's probably their best trade chip this summer. But we will see. I don't want to make any sweeping statements about whether I think he'll be traded or not. However, I will say it's rookie extension summer for him, and that is an interesting proposition because I always am usually team no rookie extensions because it doesn't hurt you at all, right? Like, if you don't get an extension done, boo-hoo, you just keep the guy in restricted free agency. And Adam always talks about, well, they could get overpaid. It's like, okay, then they get overpaid and you let him go. To me, if someone wants to overpay a guy, great, but if they don't live up to the money that they wanted when they asked for a rookie extension, then you win. And if they do live up to it, then you just pay them that amount the next year. And it's like, it's not going to create animosity. You know, the Pacers always pay guys what they're worth. They're pretty good at that, actually. They take care of their guys. They do a good job with that kind of stuff. So I'm not worried about that in particular. And I do think they'll try to get an extension done because they did with Turner, which actually surprised me quite a bit. But that deal turned out to be pretty fair. I don't think either team got a steal necessarily, or either side, excuse me, got a steal necessarily in that way. But yeah, it's very interesting how that worked out with him. So I think it came down to the wire. Maybe it'll come down to the wire with Sabonis. It'll be very interesting to see exactly how that shakes out for him. The deadline for that is October 31st for them to – oh, I'm sorry. It's 2 days before the season starts to get an extension done on him if they want to. I think it would behoove them to try. I think but with rookie extensions, remember, there's little incentive for the team to do it unless they're getting a big bargain because they can always just sign the guy next summer to a value that he is worth. And if he becomes a max player, then you pay him the max. And if he doesn't, you either pay him what he's worth or let some other stupid team vastly overpay the guy, which would suck to lose him. But if that's how it happens, that's how it happens. You have to be smart in that situation. It's a sunk cost what he's done for you before. So, yeah, that's my long Sabonis rant on his future. I think it behooves the Pacers to try to keep him happy and keep him around this summer, and I think they'll try to do it. Thank you guys for tuning in to a great lottery and listen to talk about a great player. Adam is here on Friday to talk Miles Turner. Thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great rest of your week, and I will see you on Monday.